SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
With me and with co-host Dale Romans.
Hey.
Breaking out of the gate in a big way. Good morning.
Good morning.
Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening online at our website too, stevebick.com. And the Thursday before Belmont, and it was the Wednesday before the Preakness that I impromptu reached out to you when word came you were entering Everfast in the Preakness, and everybody was laughing. And then who was the first person I saw when the horses crossed the wire at Baltimore?
That's right. You gave me a nice high five.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You said it ran better than it looked in the Pat Day Mile, and he's doing good coming out of it. And what's to be afraid of?
There's nothing to lose. There's absolutely nothing to lose. And the horse I came, he was sound, healthy, doing well. And I thought after the race, Derby Day, I thought it was a sneaky good race. And afterwards, he trained different. He was just a little more aggressive, a little more arrogant about what he was doing, so why not lead him over? I'd hate to see him run a monster race in an A other than that, and then I'd just been kicking myself.
It wasn't until we were driving home on Saturday night and then into Sunday that I, in kind of getting organized mentally, Tina was driving, and I start to realize, wow, Dale, Calumet second. Oh, Jack Sisterson won the Chick Lang. Oh, wait, English B won the Murphy. I said on the air Monday, I think, God bless Brad Kelly and his how eager he is to be involved, and what he's done at Calumet, what he's doing Standing Stallions, and his, you know, we don't hear from him, but that's okay.
You know what? Sunday afternoon, I talked to him on the phone.
Oh!
He called.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's a highlight of my career. And he gave me his number and said, call anytime, and I haven't had the nerve to do it yet, but I might tomorrow, today or tomorrow, we'll discuss the plans for Saturday. But that was a big day for Calumet, and who deserves it more? I mean, Calumet is legendary, and Brad's put a lot into the game, and nobody deserves a big weekend like that than he does. And then when we talked on Sunday, he said, you know, that half the battle's a willingness to do it. And if you think about it, that's true.
When you look at these races, and you know, when we know for Derby, we talk all winter long and all through the travail and around the country and, you know, leading into March and April, we know you're pointing and you're trying to get to Derby. Once you're past that, and you've got a horse like this, and you've got a horse like Nolan's Cat when you ran the maiden in the Belmont and finished third. What is the mentality in terms of picking a horse that you think is going to be okay and could acquit himself well?
Well, it's just a three-year-old that's doing well that you think can get the distance. That's, to me, what it boils down to. With Nolan's Cat, everybody laughed when I brought a maiden up here, and I'm not sure. He might have been my second classic starter, I think, and the first one.
Is that right?
I think so. It was early on, and
boy, it feels like yesterday.
It does. It does. And you know, but it's different.
It's the neighborhood.
Yeah,
we're on Taylor
here.
Boulevard.
The Louisville Redneck Walk by.
Brad Cox.
yeah, he's one of us. But yeah, Nolan's Cat today would have felt a lot different to me than Nolan's Cat back then, because I kind of felt like I was putting myself way out there. I hadn't done any of those things before, and the things hadn't worked out yet. And after you do some different, you know, pull different moves and they work out, it's not as hard to do it the next time. But that was stressful coming up here. You know who my biggest supporter was coming up? We flew on the plane together. I remember like it yesterday, Wayne Lucas.
Oh, all right.
He had beaten Nolan's Cat in a maiden race. They put a mile and a quarter maiden race up for us to compete in, and he won, and I was second, and he came up, so I came too, and he was a huge supporter of it. He said, "You know your horse. Go do what you know. Run your horse where you think." He said, "That's the day he told me that he had made millions of dollars running horses where people said he didn't belong."
Well, and exactly, and there's been any number of even recent successes that
the filly won the Breeders' Cup Santa Anita, ended up champion. I can't think of her name right now. How many people would have run her out there other than Wayne?
She ran subsequently. She ran in the Delta Princess.
Yes.
And she won something, and she won the Hollywood Starlet.
Afterward. After the Breeders' because Cup. But going into the Breeders' Cup, performed. It looked
exactly.
Like she belonged at all. And Wayne knew his horse, and that was impressive. He said, don't wait around for him to prove it to you in a race. If you trust what you're seeing and go with it, and it's helped me through my career.
Let's get a quick snapshot. We didn't talk much about Derby when we were on the fly about the Preakness entry. There's obviously not a tremendous amount of build up to this, and I don't want to call it anticlimactic, but I made the point. I thought that there's a little bit of burnout now from the 3 weeks, and even the subsequent out of Preakness, the 2 weeks post Derby and all the anguish and hand wringing, and I think people are, a little out of breath when we get here now.
Yeah, well, maybe because this has been a different Triple Crown trail,
yeah.
And we don't have a horse going for the Triple Crown. There's my horse walking back on the track after schooling.
Went through the paddock.
Yeah, he went through the paddock. Tammy looks good on him, doesn't she? But, this has been a high-stress, pedal-to-the-metal Triple Crown the whole time. A lot of things going on, a lot of discussion, a lot talked about. And it's different. And maybe we have fizzled a little coming into the Belmont, but this is going to be a great race in its own right.
He's by Take Charge Indy, and he's out of an Awesome Again mare. And so certainly
the distance shouldn't be a problem.
Although looking at him, he's kind of a compact horse. He's got kind of that almost a European look to him.
And he's not real heavy. He's not a big horse at all. But he's just, like I say, he's a little engine that could. He just keeps on coming. And when he ran in the Holy Bull, you see the second he ran at a big, long price. That's what showed me that he can run with the best. So when he's doing well, take your shots with the best. You know what I think a story of the Preakness and Everfast is it was only 28-1. How many times do you see a horse 50-1 in a program go down?
It was very strange. The betting overall was strange. Now, what's interesting about that 28-1, he was the more appropriate price in the exotics because you could tell from the
somebody made a big play just to win. Or people did.
The money spread all over the place, and here's whatchamacallit.
That doesn't help much.
The Godolphin. Oh my God!
Come on, you're a professional.
The Thundersnow.
All right. I
also saw there's a European horse out here that has got an unusual saddle cloth, clearly European, and I don't know. I've got to try to find out who it is. Very handsome. I tell you, who's a gorgeous horse. I'm going to say it again. If you see him come out, he should come out shortly. Sonneteer from DeSormos. Oh my God!
He buys a good horse. That guy. Those DeSormos know what they're doing.
It's another Calumet.
Oh yeah, yeah it is.
There you go.
Let's get back to the betting.
Yeah.
We didn't finish the betting story. That interests me.
It was very odd for everybody. The Derby has become one thing with a 19 or 20 horse field, and almost nobody anymore is 80 or 90 or 100-1. That's the mind that bird phenomena, the Giacomo phenomena. The odds have truncated. This was a little stranger though in Baltimore because there was no discernible reason that he shouldn't have been 45-1, 58-1.
I usually say when they put in a program 50-1, they don't want to embarrass you and put 99. Most of them go the other way, and he went down. So I was saying there was the gamblers are smart. There's good players out there.
But not to belie that, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it is some, the computer can account for a little bit of that, but he was probably.
But he opened up. You would think computer would be late money coming in. He opened up 25.
I know. It's very strange. And there hasn't been a specific, we haven't heard anybody that was sending it in on a wind tote, but he had to have been about 60-1. Andy Serling, I think Andy or Nick Tamaro thought he was probably 60-1 in the exotic pools, which is about what he should have been in the in the wind. Yeah. Listen, it's fine.
Right, there wasn't any of my people that I. Nobody's told me that they made a big bet.
That's the funny thing.
Where it came from. I know.
That is the funny part of it.
I'm going to go ahead and credit the players are smart.
You've been smart for running. This is a race, and you and I laughed. I forget who was it. Was it American Pharoah, I think, when you finished third, right?
Yes, he was one of the thirds. We've had four thirds.
Four thirds in this race.
That's got to be a straight statistic.
You're the Woody Stevens of show horses.
Yeah. My whole life. I had a high school teacher told me there was an article called Lost at Sea. It was about a kid stuck in the average and at sea. And he said, that's you.
This race and his running style, you know, this has not been a particularly good spot for deep closers. Do you think he can? It is a good place for horses that just kind of chunk along, right. 24-3, 24-4, 25-flat, 24-4. Can he do that, or does he have to come with a run?
No, I think he can. The come with the run was just the last race. I mean, in the Holy Bull, he was always kind of in contention, and that was a shorter, much shorter race. The last race, we just saw a lot of speed in there, and when I talked to the jockey side, just take him way back and just let him sit there and get into a gallop and run the last 3/8 of a mile, and it worked out. That's not going to work here. I haven't sat down with the jock yet, but I will, and we'll figure out what looks like the best place to be. You know, Woody Stevens always said this was a speed horse race.
Yes. And, you know, Baffert is taking advantage in terms of his approach, just, you know, going on out there. And Harry Rice told me a funny story the other day when I came in on Sunday, and we were talking about Justify, and he said, you know, I picked up Mike Smith. He was Mike Smith's valet for ages. And he said, I went to pick up Mike at the airport, and we were coming back, and we were listening to you, and you guys were talking about the pace and about sitting off. And Mike said, I'm going to the lead. They're not going to catch me.
Right.
That's been the gambit. Behind those horses, I'm looking here, Keen Ice, Medal Count the year before. First Dude off the second
in the
Preakness behind Looking at Lucky.
Yes.
And Nolan's Cat. Those are the four.
Four thirds. That's an odd statistic. Maybe I could move up just one or two notches. I'd be perfect.
Well, and that's in 11 years of participation. Who else? You've run others here.
Dullahan was the favorite. He did not want to get to go the distance. I guess I always thought he did. But
Shaq at American. That was a crazy. That was a weird
Derby.
People forget about the incident trail. at the break.
Sure,
with Rajiv.
That was a rough run race.
Yeah,
Shaq didn't want to go a mile and a half. He was his best at him. I think he ran his best race of his life right here in the Met. It was one of the best races any horse ever ran for me when he was four. He was a spectacular miler, and I'm bringing his son back to run in the race this year. I mean, promises fulfilled. And it's interesting that father son have almost been on the same trail.
Let's actually fold that in, and before we talk Met Mile and the overall 3 days of racing, which starts today, what do you expect in this race, in this Belmont?
I don't know. I've looked at it a little bit. I think that the outside horse will come out running, and or the two outside horses. They'll probably get themselves in position. I don't. It's just a very even race, and it's a funny. Favorites are 9 and 10 out there. They're both nice horses. It's harder to knock them, and we'll be sitting, I would say, mid pack, just trying to get into a good solid gallop mode and come running. But it's up for the taking for anybody.
Mark Cassie getting plenty of credit for soldiering forth out of the miasma of the Derby, and will basically be bringing the only horse that made the three races. There's always something to be said about that, the horse to come into this race, Dale, and not be favored. I think it's a little unusual, and I understand the Tacitus talk and how appropriate he is for this race. And there were plenty of people going into Derby that kept saying Tacitus's right race is going to be the Belmont. What's your thought between these two?
Tacitus was my horse for the Derby. I thought he was trained super going up to the Derby, and he did run a good race. Gets beat three lengths. It's a coin toss on who's going to be the favorite between the two. And at the end of the day, Orwell might be the favorite. We're just talking morning line now.
True, and so, it'll be close.
Right, it'll be very close, and they're both good horses. Definitely those two horses race to lose. And then I think the rest of us are just hoping that somebody stubs
their
toe a little
yep,
bit, and
we're
right
is.
There to be opportunistic.
Well, you're going to be opportunistic, and you got the chance. You mentioned promises fulfilled in a lot
race
of
race that's come up to be.
It's unbelievable, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It is a nice mix of styles in terms of sprinters and turnbacks.
That's right. It's like everybody's coming together. But this is some race. I mean, McKenzie's 109 figure last time out. That was a spectacular. Anybody who didn't see that race should go back and watch it. Did you watch it?
I was there. We were standing right there.
Yeah, and the horse circled around him like he was going to draw off on him, and Mike just never moved.
Well, and Smith didn't flinch when he got passed, and he just
sat there. It looked like the old days of Pat Day at Churchill Downs, and he smooched to him, and he just exploded. He's going to be tough to beat. But you got six Grade One winners in here. And that's I don't know when you ever see that.
Considering our distribution of horse flesh, it's a rarity right now.
It is. I mean, if this race was the Breeders' Cup Mile, you'd think the Breeders' Cup put a great race together.
Well, and especially on the one turn.
Right.
Because we've had so few opportunities. The concept was great, but invariably, unless we go to Churchill and until we come back here, God knows when that's going to be, we just don't get to run the Breeders' Cup Mile the way it's supposed to be, the way they wanted it to be
right.
conceived.
Churchill Downs in here are the only
and that's
two
it.
Places that you'll run that one turn mile probably. But this is about as good as Mattoli. I mean, what can you say bad about him? And you know, when you have a horse like Promises Fulfilled at 12-1, it tells you what kind of race you're in.
Exactly. What's your thoughts? Richie DePass has been sitting with us, of course, the agent for Luis Saez. And what do you want to do in here? I mean, you don't want to run with Mattoli, but it seems like you almost have to get to the lead. That's where he's at his best.
I was in front of him last race, and he ran by us, and we'll probably be in front of him again.
Yeah.
We're going to get and go. I mean, we're not going to change our style at all. He has speed and stamina, and might as well take advantage of it.
When you come to a race like this and a place like this, one of the strangest records you'll ever see in a horse is this Firenze Fire, who is so much better here that it's astounding. I mean, he's a good horse anyway, but his three performances here, Dale, are stunning, and it is really strange. I mean, and I know the critics will line up all over the place regarding Jason Service, but I don't know how you argue with that record with the way this horse performs here.
He's something else, and he's been a thorn in my side. I mean, he's beaten me so many times. And you look down here, even there's still seven trumpets, and the Jerome is still on here. He beat me at Saratoga when he was a 2-year-old. I ran second to him. He's been a thorn in my side, and he has no pedigree. I mean, he's just a flat out runner.
And particularly his three best performances,
well,
standout performances here.
This racetrack's different than every place else too, and he likes it.
Yes.
And it is a one turn race. He's always running, and he likes that. Everything lines up for him when he runs on this racetrack. You know, Woody Stevens, you say when you cross the Hudson, you had to deal with him and Big Sandy. Well, Big Sandy lives up to its name, and a lot of horses don't like it.
Yeah, yeah. And it has to do with the angles of legs and
right.
You know, hoof and the whole bit.
We talked about all that last year.
Yes,
we went through the anatomy,
which I love. That's one of my favorite.
Right.
That's one of my favorite things, and it helps people understand, you know, why horses excel, why at Churchill with the clay content and their hoof doesn't slide as much, and you know, it all. That's why there's horses.
There's a lot of
horses.
Physics involved.
Exactly.
And the people don't realize, but you know, Churchill's changed a lot. It used to have a lot more loom and clay in it than
yes.
it does today. They've ran out of the dirt where they used to got it for 50 years out of the Ohio River, and they said that it's empty. You can't get it anymore. So it's a different makeup. Now, it's not the same old Churchill Downs I grew up on, but I think it's helped us ship out of there and run better. And it might help us up here because it's a lot more like Belmont Park now. It's deeper and sandier than it used to be. And the first five finishers in the Preakness all train at Belmont Park. That's home. I mean, Churchill Downs. That's home for them.
There you go. Good point.
You know, that is a super racetrack. You talk about surfaces. Pimlico is a very good surface. Tammy says it's about as good as she's been on to gallop a horse.
When she gallops?
Yes, yes. I hope they don't want to change that place like they're talking about.
No,
that's a whole different show.
That's my, that was my cause 2 weeks ago.
We could get into racetracks and surfaces and soil, but that would be a whole show on its own.
No doubt. Let me get some Dale Roman's politics in before we wrap up, because a Dale visit without a few inflammatory moments isn't a Dale visit.
I'm trying to be a calmer, nicer person.
Well, so. Nice was never an issue. I haven't really asked you about the atmosphere and
the atmosphere of the world's not good. I mean, everybody hating on each other back and forth. And I don't know. It's depressing at times. I'm not a big Trump supporter, as you know, but I'm a supporter of the President of the United States, whoever it is. But it's going to be an interesting election coming up. I like Mayor Pete. You listen to that guy talk.
He's very smart.
Smart. He's Harvard graduate, 8 languages, 2 tours in overseas. I mean, they're
very
a smart guy. If the nation's ready for a guy like him, I think that he'd be a good one for us. That's who my daughter's trying to go to work for. She's in Des Moines, Iowa. She's going to hook on to some campaign, but she'd like to be with him.
The political situation and the atmosphere California-wise that continues, and there was another, we don't really have time for it between now and tomorrow, but Frank Stronach bearing some more, with every passing week, more and more salvos from Frank about the current state of management at Stronach Group, and the trickle down effect is still uncertain about what they're instituting. The latest, I'll ask you. Here's one I can ask you: the idea of a veterinarian signing off on your entry 3 days before the horse is going to run.
Yeah,
how is that going to work?
I don't know. I think they're just scrambling out there. I don't know what's going on. To me, it's got to be just work on that racetrack, whatever you have to do. And I think there's a lot of things that can be implemented. But at least they're trying to do stuff. As long as I don't like that. It's not the crop. It's not the Lasix. It's not horsemanship. All those things were the same as they are now before the rash of injuries out there. So you got to look for something new, something that changed.
And those that are closest to it know what changed.
Right. And I don't know where you go from here with it, though. What do you?
Well, the problem is it. You ever see the Cassandra Crossing? Remember the Cassandra Crossing, which was a disaster sort of film about the train and ultimately right. The train is going to go off a trestle and into a ravine.
But you got to try to stop it.
Yeah, they're the engine, and there's nobody in the compartment that can put the brakes on or shift it to another track.
What do you think the Breeders' Cup is going to do?
Well, I was going to ask you that next. What would you do?
I think I'd pull the plug right now. I'd be back at Churchill Downs.
What do they, for instance, I mean, what if they, what do they do after Del Mar? They come back for the fall meet, the autumn meet, and there's a normal incident or two. A horse or two goes wrong in September, October. What do you think? They think the outcry, knowing that there's going to be a nationally televised and national event, international event, how do you even take that chance?
I don't think they can. I don't know. I mean, that's a tough decision to make. But I don't think you can take the shot of going out there. And it's got to be something done very soon, I would think.
You would think so. It's July, June, July, August, September. You have 5 months.
Yeah. So it doesn't – I don't know. I don't know where we go. But hopefully they'll get it worked out.
Well, and next week.
Very rare that I'm lost for words.
A little bit. That's all right. That's all right.
Opinions. But, this is so serious.
Exactly.
It's hard to just talk about tongue in cheek.
Well, we're not being tongue in cheek.
No.
We might be off the cuff, but.
Right.
Not tongue in cheek.
No, but the health of the horses always should come first. Catastrophic injuries, the biggest problem we have in the game. And it doesn't matter if it's what's going on in California is going on. We all deserve these horses to work as hard as we can to make the race as safe as possible for them. And, we just got to keep working to try to get that rate down lower and lower.
Are you? What do you have? What are you running next week? Foster and Fleur de Lis and Matt Wynn, etc.
Not much at Churchill. Those. Where is that water running coming?
It's coming from up here.
Oh, there. Okay. Not much in the stakes at Churchill right now. You know, we got some good 2-year-olds coming up, and that's what I'm looking forward to. Richard DePass, agent
Rich
for Louis Saez, is going to comment on the Kentucky Derby.
Well,
I want to hear this.
I'd like to say to all who are involved in the DQ, the owners of all the other horses, we've been taking off some horses, and the excuse that we've got is that they thought Louis might be carrying feelings towards the horse owners or trainers. We have no ill feelings to anyone, and we wish all continued success in racing, and we will try our best every time we go out there, and God bless everyone, and may they have the best racing possible. Thank you.
Rich DePass, and of course Richard has been taking care of the book for Louis Saez for as long as I know, and you know, Louis won 3 races in our silks, and it's funny, Rich, you know, when jocks are passive, they get criticized. When jocks are aggressive, they get criticized. It's no win. Unbelievable. Yep.
So, but he has promised to ride my horse in a straight course for the Belmont.
Well, you got a racetrack so wide. You got a racetrack so wide
that everything's straight. I can't make him mad.
All right. Dale Robbins, everybody.
All right,
always tremendous.
Thank you, buddy.
We're going to take the break. Stay right here. I want to take a picture, Dale, with the two of you. I got my little spot over here.
All right.
We take a picture. We're going to take a break. We're going to get Rich Migliori, who's been standing by. Rich is in the – not standing by here.
Okay.
He's standing by back upstate at his farm. But Mig is going to join us. I want to talk some jock issues and some history around here with Rich and
Migliori for Hall of Fame. I'm going to start.
There we go. We're pushing Mig and Dick Powell and Tony Black, Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman, Rich Eng and more. All right, we won't play out the whole string of music. Let's take the break right here. And we'll come back. Mig joins us next. We're live at Belmont. It is Thursday. Racing starts today. It is the late post. There is this coordinated broadcasting thing that goes on with Churchill and Naira. And 3 o'clock, 3:05 is your first post here. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. A triple crown for the ages wraps up with the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, June 8th. And no matter who you're betting in the Belmont, your best bet is with ExpressBet. ExpressBet's world-famous Belmont Stakes wager guide is available Friday, May 31st. It features analysis, insights, and picks from handicappers like Millie Ball, Steve Bick, and Jeff Siegel. Plus, cash in on ExpressBet's promotions, including a money-back guarantee on the Belmont Stakes and a 10% Exacta bonus on Gold Cup Friday. And if you don't have an ExpressBet account yet, now is the perfect time to get started. New customers who sign up before the Belmont get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Your best bet is with ExpressBet. Visit ExpressBet.com to learn more. And remember to join ExpressBet on Saturday, June 8th to watch and bet the Belmont Stakes. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races back at Belmont, and it's funny, a couple of people can hear the water that is cascading from one of the plant boxes. They've got the hoses into the, you know, the big concrete planters that are right down at the base of the boxes. And I mean, I don't know why that the hose is in this one box, and I think the thing is all right. It's like 7 or 8 minutes already. The plants are wet. They've been watered. It's cascading down. It's nice though. It gives it sort of, you know, the sound of Lenny Schulman was here. Lenny said, "I got to go to the bathroom." He ran off. too funny. Thanks to Dale Romans, as always. Dale, refreshing and fun. And although he was a little bit at a loss, as he said, a little bit at a loss for words on a couple of things there. That's not like him. Rich Migliori is standing by. We also had Rich to pass. And Rich, that's the only, as far as I know, the only public announcement that Rich to pass has made as the agent of Louis Saez. Rich Migliori joins us from upstate and coming down Saturday, but I wasn't going to let a Belmont week go by without a visit from Mig.
How are you?
You know, I'm good. I will admit that, you know, a little, me and Siaka, a little bit on the bleary-eyed side. We had the late seeding last night at Rayo's, and that was about as great a treat. Jimmy Ventura is, you know, Jimmy grew up with sons and daughters of the families, and so, you know, Jimmy's part of the family there, and he called the
Did
other
you see
day.
My
he said,
picture hanging in there?
"We looked for your picture. I'm sure it's there somewhere. It may be in a rotation. I didn't want to tell you and Michael that, but we couldn't find it. We couldn't find it. But it was a lot, boy. It's my first time there, and I, you know, Siaka, of course, has been there several times. But I had a ball. It was everything you wanted to think it was. It is."
Terrific. Good. That sounds like a fun time.
I'll give the, some of the specifics you know, down the road tomorrow when Hammer and Jimmy are with us. And actually, it's, you know, this has been an eating tour. The night before, one of our partners in the horses, Steve Carlin, who's been involved with Team Valor for years, nice enough to get involved. He and Alan, Dr. Miller, are in on the 3 3-year-olds. And he took Gary and I and Josephine to Veneri in Westbury, which was terrific. Terrific.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. And is Tina down?
Not until tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. All right. Well, then you'll be complete.
Exactly. And until then, I'm half a person. And, yeah, we've been getting the lunches over at King & Birdo's. We'll be there Saturday night. And you know, there's certain things. It's funny. It's become there's certain Everywhere you go, Rich, during the Triple Crown run, you know, there's certain things that you just do and become kind of part of the traditions.
Well, and they're good traditions. You get to catch up with everybody, eat some good food, and get ready for an absolutely outstanding couple of days of racing. I mean, it really, got to commend the cards put together. It's almost like a Royal Ascot kind of feel, you know, just like that festival. Yeah, I'm excited about the races. I really am.
Well, Belmont over the years has been termed America's Ascot, and we do have three tremendous days of racing. And you know, one of the traditions that I tried to create a new tradition, the Belmont Bunny that has gotten a bizarrely big response on Twitter. I crafted a mythic bunny that goes from barn to barn here, and then you delivered a shocking blow to the bunny. That was horrific.
Well, actually, and it's a true story. I was down by the paddock. It was late in training one morning. I see a little rabbit out of nowhere. Here comes this hawk, and we have the Belmont Hawks. Everybody knows they roost above the offices on the third floor and above the press box. And he swooped in and had some rabbit for dinner. It was horrible to watch. But there are plenty of other rabbits, plenty of hawks, and actually. And I know Barry Schwartz doesn't believe me, but this is a true story. I was in front on a filly, a sprinter, stretching out on the turf, and she was very rank, leaving the mile in a 16th chute, and almost running off with me. And a rabbit jumped out of the hedge, kind of didn't know what to do, got confused, you know, saw the field of horses converging on it, took off running along the hedge with the horses, like in front of me a little bit. My filly threw her ears up, like checking it out. And then the rabbit ducked back in the hedge, but it took my filly off the bridle and helped me win a race. So that was one time a rabbit actually didn't soften up the speed.
Bow!
Ow! True story.
Tip your servers, everybody. Rich will be here all week. That was delivered with real aplomb.
Well, see, when I'm out here on my farm walking around, I'm relaxed. I'm not, you know, too intense. And my dog just came out of the woods. He's been spending a lot of time in the woods there. I think, Jack, do you have a coyote girlfriend? I think he's got a coyote girlfriend back there, Steve.
You know, you talk about riding here, and before we talk about races and talk about some history and you know the idea of these you know these super days and the bunching of races the way you know they're utilized these days, this festival concept. I brought up with Mark Cassie on Tuesday, you know, I asked him if Gaffleone was going to get a chance to ride, and he said, well, he's riding for me on the grass, and then it does turn out that he's got two main track rides. And I thought it was important that before he got out here for Belmont, you know, for him to go at least around one turn and get a sense of the size of the place. And even with Mark saying, you know, he's an accomplished rider, and he's aware. Yeah, there's been plenty of accomplished riders that have come here, and it's easy to get, I think either as you said at the time or Gary Stevens did with me once, you get lost out there on this track.
Well, I think it's just because of the configuration that when you get to the far turn at every other racetrack in North America, you start leaning forward a little bit, very almost unconsciously, allowing your horse to start to pick it up a little bit and, you know, do more, and it's not like that you're even asking them, it's just your body language, your demeanor, and a horse will start to pick it up, especially a good horse, and, you know, that's what you have in races like the Belmont Stakes. They're good horses, so they don't need a tremendous amount of encouragement, and they'll start to pick it up or creep forward, and you've still got 5 furlongs to go, where that might be the half mile or the 3.5 at other racetracks. So it's not as though people aren't conscious, well, there's the 5/8 pole. It's just that you're so conditioned as you get into the second turn to allow the race to start to take more shape. And it's very subtle, and even though, like I said, you're conscious of, well, that's the 5/8 pole, just that leaning forward and allowing your horse to start to stride out a little bit more, and you can't take it back then. It's not like driving a car, you know, once. You know, obviously very good horses, you know, great horses have multiple moves, and that's one of the things that makes them great is that they can stop, start, idle, wait for riders' cues and have multiple moves. Most horses don't. And once you get them going, you don't want to stop the momentum then, because then it's very hard to build it back up again. It's not driving a car.
Well, he's going to have a couple of opportunities, and then he's going to have to make the circuit here. And
he is. Listen, he's a very sharp kid. I have really, really enjoyed how he's handled, conducted himself between, what happened in the Derby. I thought, handled it with class. He didn't claim foul. He said, well, he really wasn't going to help us any. And he didn't complain. He didn't cry about it. And it was what it was. And then the way he handled the Preakness and conducted himself and the race he rode that he delivered there. I mean, this kid's a pro. And, we're very blessed right now to have so much young talent. And you think about the core of, young riders that are just really making their mark. Obviously, both Ortiz brothers, they're fabulous. Manny Franco, tremendously gifted athlete, talented kid. Dylan Davis has really made a nice impression this Belmont meet. In full disclosure, my brother has his book, but he's third in the standings, wins, and second money won. That's a big step for Dylan. And then Tyler is right there with those guys. I mean, he belongs in that group. And, this is like the 25 and under club. I mean, they stay healthy, knock on wood, nobody gets banged up. These kids are going to rack up big numbers.
Well, and then you've got some of the regional big outfit riders, a Ricardo Santana type, and even the second and thirds that Asmussen has. Ramon Vasquez, who's aggressive, and I think rides well. And who was it that I talked to Steve about? Diego Sanez. I'm not sure how old he is.
I'm not familiar with him. You bring up Santana. About as strong a finisher as is going right now, that guy. I mean, he really finishes on a horse.
Well, and, speaking of finish, and he's certainly not, he's not a youngster. He's in the prime of his career. And yesterday, in conversation with Ron Anderson, we talked about Joel. And, there had been that critique, not a criticism, but a critique of Rosario's approach to the season, where he had had these winters where he really was, kind of in a daze or not focused the first, third of the year. Then the middle third, he would start to, kind of get into form. And then, late in the season and toward Breeders' Cup and those kinds of dates, he was, really at his best. And it seems like this year, and even with the California run and then returning and so forth, it feels like he's more focused. I mean, he's still capable of kind of a head scratching ride here and there, but on a day in day out basis, it's hard not to put Rosario at the top of any list to me, Rich.
Well, he is a super finisher, and I love the rhythm and the balance he gets, with a horse. I think his hand ride is most reminiscent, and I won't say it's exactly, but the most reminiscent of Lafitte Pink Eye. I just love the way he'll really, knuckle down on one, hands and heels, and gets a lot out of a horse. I agree. There are times when he does not put a horse in the race or get position or doesn't seem to worry so much about saving ground, but there are riders that their philosophy on riding is to let a horse find their rhythm wherever that is, and then when they start their run, just don't get them stopped. And, Mike Smith comes to mind. Mike Smith has been that rider for his entire career, and I think it's worked out pretty well. I see Rosario a little bit like that as well. He lets a horse get into their rhythm, and the horses that really appreciate it, a horse like Orr, boy, does it pay, huge dividends. Bobby's Kitten, 6.5 on the grass, was last coming across the dirt crossing and finished wild. So, to the point, though, there's just so much talent. There really is a great group, a core group of riders. and it seems like it's getting spread out a little bit more, you know, I think in the 80s and 90s. You always had, like, certain guys like Cordero, George Velasquez, and then Jerry Bailey. They were going to get first shot at all the good horses, and then everybody else was left to kind of, you know, pick up the secondary and third kind of string, if you will. Now it just seems like it's a little bit more balanced. You know, you see it's actually more balanced with riders, less balanced with trainers, actually. Where, you know, trainers, you know, when a guy could have only 40 or 42 horses at Belmont, and it was before Saratoga reopened in the spring, a guy would fill up, let's say Woody Stevens, and go, hey, you know, Bobby Rabato's a really good trainer. Why don't you give him a shot? And they would get spread out. Well, now no one has to say no because it's always a small sample price.
You mentioned the turf sprinting, and that I used a quote of Andy's with Ron about you know, Andy mentioning the other day, either last week or the week before, that he thought that Joel was the best turf sprint rider in his memory, and that leads to a question, Rich, about the festival concept, and you know, you won countless stakes throughout the New York circuit, and the way the schedule is, I mean, are we concentrating, you know, too many races in too short a period of time, or is this, you know, where, you know, racing should be right now in terms of you know, getting eyes on a handful of big days and, you know, getting everything in one spot? And I got a couple of follow-ups to that, but what's your overall thought about it? I do want to talk about the Jiper specifically too.
Well, you know, for me, I didn't really agree 100% with like the Met Mile being on Belmont Day because I feel like the Met Mile is a standalone event. Now that being said, you look at the Belmont Stakes card put together, and you know, the Met Mile being key component in that. I think it worked. And I appreciate that you've got a true festival of racing. This is a celebration of racing, and hats off to, you know, Martin Panza, Naira, the entire crew, because this is as good a 3 days of racing as you're going to see, and it feels like a springtime Breeders' Cup type atmosphere. The only place I don't agree with it at this point, Steve, is Saratoga.
Saratoga, yeah.
And this is why, because as a kid, and back then it was 24 days, and I'm going back and showing my age, but a guy could see a good horse on any given day, a graded stake course. Like, so you had pretty much a graded stake nearly every single day in a 24-day meet. I know it's longer and it's more drawn out now. And I just think that stacking them on those days doesn't allow somebody who, let's say, man, I can get up to Saratoga on Wednesday, and he might have got to see the Honorable Miss or the A Phenomenon or the Vanderbilt now. And so I feel like that's the only place I don't agree with it, because it's a 40-day celebration of racing up there, and everybody, it's a destination for it. And I don't think you need to have, you know, six grade ones on one day when people are going to show up because it's Saratoga and they're going to see good horses every day.
I agree. I mean, the Travers with another two or three stakes on the undercard is fine. It doesn't need to be a seven stake day. It just doesn't make, I don't know. To me, I agree. It's a bit of an overkill. When I bring up the Jiper, I bring it up because being run as a grade one now, and you won this race in the 80s and the 90s, and the idea that a race like the Jaipur is now a grade one tells you a little bit about, you know, the way the industry morphs and you know, distances and surfaces and you know, the ebbs and flows, and I bring it up, I mean, because you won for Joe Gioia and Richie O'Connell back on Grand Continental, and on Basket Weave, right, for Reinecker. Yeah, and Green Tree. And, you know, it was a grade three then, and you wouldn't have ever, I couldn't imagine thinking at that time that a Jaipur would be a grade one.
Well, it kind of shows you how, you know, sprinting has become more and more important. Stamina has become less and less important, unfortunately, in the American thoroughbred, it seems. And back then, they hardly had any turf sprints in New York. I mean, the Jiper, when I won it back then, was 7 furlongs on the turf. They wouldn't run 6 on the turf. They wouldn't run 5.5 on the turf. They felt like it tore up the turf course too much. And, you know, if a horse couldn't get at least 7/8, then he didn't belong on the turf. They would never run maiden claimers on the turf. They wouldn't run, Hialeah back then, they wouldn't run maidens on the turf. If you had a good maiden, you had to run an allowance race. And you didn't get first preference because you were a maiden, so you couldn't enter 4 times and not get in the entire winter. Only very high-priced claiming races, and they were infrequent on the turf. But it shows you how, you know, things do evolve, and that, you know, people are wagering on these races. Turf racing is very, very competitive. You know, trips make a big difference. There's a lot of wagering opportunities, and you know that's why sometimes when I read things, I'm like, well, they got to cater to the gambler or the customer more. Well, they do. They have. I mean, they've changed a lot of things to accommodate what people want. And you get bigger fields and, like I said, more value and better opportunities to cash a good ticket on the turf. So I do think that the racing associations, not just New York, but all around the country, have definitely evolved to accommodate their customer, their fan base.
Let's get some opinions and let's get some thoughts. We'll start with the feature, and I can be pithy and say, who do you like in the Met? If we're going to talk feature, the Met and the Belmont. We'll make them co-features, Rich.
Well, to me, the Belmont is a single. I just can't see anybody beating Tacitus. As much as I respect War of Will, and I love the way Mark Cassie's handled him and the entire Triple Crown situation, I just can't see him getting a mile and a half. And Tacitus, to me, if you look at the way he trained previous to the Derby, he still had a bit of a clown attitude. He'd want to lay on his workmate sometimes, and not maybe always the most 100% focused kind of horse. Well, from a mental perspective, he is absolutely like the light bulb's gone on. If you watch him work now, he's straight as a string. Focused on his work. He's not worried about who's next to him, who's not next to him. I think that from a mental perspective, he has totally turned a corner, and I think he's hit his zenith of fitness. I always look at a horse the way they travel, and when they get a certain lightness and airiness to their stride and kind of bounce over a racetrack, that tells me they've hit a fitness level that they hadn't reached before, and I see that from him from a physical perspective. Put that on top of the fact that he's trained by Hall of Famer Bill Mott, the fact that he's got the pedigree he has to back him up, I'd be very shocked if Tacitus did not win this Belmont Stakes. Shocked. And that's the only way I can put it. The Met Mile, on the other hand, man, you can go, geez, Mattioli. How do you not love Mattioli? With that being said, I'm going to pick Friends Fire there because of what he's done at Belmont. I think he's a different horse at Belmont. And I think he's going to sit right in behind the speed and maybe get that kind of tripped out, trip that you want. And I can't get past thinking about his Dwyer and then his prep for this to run happy. I mean, he was in the bridle turning in 2 armfuls of horse. And as much as I respect Mattioli, and I'd be thrilled if he won it because I'm a big fan of that horse, and the Heilig votes and Steve Asmussen, I'm going to go with Friends Fire.
Other spots on the cards today, tomorrow, Saturday. Any other horses that you particularly are, kind of as you look through the fields, were either excited about watching or, you know, races that have piqued your interest?
I mean, there's so many. I would say Homerique in the New York handicap. What she did going a mile and a 16th in her first start in the country for Chad Brown. I mean, she blasted home. She had to come home in sub-22 and won just because she's good, not because she relished the distance. And now getting to stretch out further, second start, I think she's spectacular, and I'm really looking forward to watching her run. The Tremont on Friday, if Maven runs for Wesley Ward, son of American Pharoah, I really liked what he did in his first start and thought he was green about it, kind of gawking around to the stretch, hanging out a little bit. I think if he goes forward, and the reason I say if he runs, I mean, I see he's been working brilliantly on the turf at Keeneland, and, you know, Wesley may decide that he goes along on the plane to Royal Ascot instead of taking on the Tremont. But I think he's a very exciting two-year-old prospect.
Well, the action starts today, our first stake. Going to get people excited right off the bat. Newspaper of record comes back, and the expectation is she'll be that much more prepared. Got caught
a
little,
I don't think she, from a fitness standpoint, I think she was fit. I think she was just too fresh. And horses can't pull for that far and fine, no matter how good they are. And she was pulling. She really was keen. I think, with that start under her, she won't be quite as fresh. And I rattle break like a church mouse, as quiet can be, because she's going to put him there. You just don't want to, set her off at all, because that's what beat her last time, other than anything else, I believe.
Just looking down my list, too, Rich, the Better Roses tomorrow. You won it with Katinka. The Brooklyn closes everything out on Saturday night, literally, 8 o'clock post. think back to Seattle Fitz. Your Brooklyn win.
Iron Deputy beat Saw Pony that day.
How about that? They're good. I forgot about that one.
Yeah,
well
that
done.
That was Jimmy Jerkins. We, I love that horse. And, I grew up around Jimmy and the Jerkins. I was a kid at Hialeah. They would come by our barn every day after feed time to go play touch football in the quarter pole shoot at Hialeah. And I was too shy. I was only 15 years old, and I wanted to go play with them, but I wouldn't say anything, and they'd walk by me, and they'd go off play. After about a week, I guess me looking like a kid looking at a jelly donut and bakery window, they were walking by, and Jimmy threw the ball to me and said, "Hey, you want to come play football?" And, we've been friends ever since. So to win a race like the Brooklyn, and Jimmy and I grew up in an era when the Brooklyn Suburban Met Mile was the handicap triple crown, that was as fun a win for me as almost any in my career.
Rich Migliori, everybody, and you follow Rich on Twitter under Richard Migliori, and you get everything. You get racing historic perspective. You get up to the minute perspective. You get farm life and family life and everything else.
And if can I a shameless plug? Sported Kings.
Yeah, media
is our Sported Kings media on Twitter. Sported Kings 4. At Sported Kings 4, because, we've been doing some good stuff, Aaron Veracruzzi, Jeff Siegel, Michael Canale, and myself, and we actually will have a podcast going over the entire Belmont card out by tomorrow.
Excellent, excellent. And you and Siegel and Aaron doing the analysis?
Yes, yeah. And, we kind of come from three different perspectives. I handicap a race on how I think the race will run, and ultimately I picked the horse that, man, I'd like to ride this horse in this spot. Jeff is extremely sharp, very analytical, and really on top of his game and his numbers. And Aaron's always looking for that long shot. So, I think it's like we all complement each other.
Without a doubt. Well, Rich, we'll see you Saturday, obviously, and we'll get everybody to tune in and get the opinions for the full and fabulous 13 race extravaganza here, and weather now clear, beautiful, some high clouds, the rain gone, and it's going to be 72 straight hours, actually 96 folding into Sunday's going to be beautiful too. So absolutely perfect going forward here toward the Belmont Stakes. Meg, thanks.
Steve, thank you. See you Saturday.
Rich Migliori. Always fun. Always one of my favorites. We'll take a top of the hour break, and Dick Powell, we got to get Dick in here. We'll do a quick review of Hong Kong. We'll get some ideas from Dick as well. He's got at least one opinion. He, of course, has to write up the Brisnet analysis for New York. So, there's only so much that it's not fair to, to pester Dick for opinions that Brisnet sells. But he's got a couple of things, and I want to talk to him about the turf course here. Dick's got a terrific analytic angle, and bend when it comes to Gulfstream in the winter. He was the first to kind of track the replacements of the temporary rails and you know, to help get people get an understanding of what kind of running styles did, you know, did best at what settings. Dick has got a thoughtful approach, and I also want to ask him, I don't think I prepped him for this, but I do want to ask him, there with the international runners that are on the card, there's a couple of different names and faces, and I made reference to Hopgarten the other day, and you know, there's a few circuits that are going to be way less familiar to people looking at the PPs, and wouldn't mind if Dick kind of ranked them a little bit, yeah, because there are, you know, much like we have here, there's A, B, C levels wherever, whatever country you're looking at. I mean, principally Ireland, England, and France, but Germany too, and Italy. You know, there's A and B's, and it helps you get a read on what kind of quality. Yeah, same thing, South American too. So, Dick Powell's going to join us, and Tony Black, and then we'll have Lenny Shulman coming down from the press box. Lenny stopped by on his way up to do some writing, and he'll come back down, and we'll get Tony. Not Tony, we'll get Steve on the air, and we'll go from there. Right here, bagel, hot bagel, hot bagel. Jay Pribben stopping by. We'll come back after this. Hour two at the races at Belmont Thursday. Racing starts today, 3:05.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm gonna write what I want you to do to me in a letter. I'm gonna write it for good or for bad or for worse or for better. I'm gonna write it for you so that you can be my lover.
Be my lover.
Ooh. When it is all mine, yours, baby, now and forever.
We're back at the races. a fun conversation with Rich Migliori. Always great. Dale Romans to start things off. And, Jay Pribman was going to join us before we wrapped up by noon tomorrow. But we're wrapping up the Triple Crown, the Derby Watch, the Triple Crown Watch. And pleasure to have the wrap-up visit from Jay Pribman live right now.
Well, Steve, the whole reason I'm here early is because as I was finishing up my Belmont preview, which I need to send in at an early hour because we had such a big press run, I got a text from you saying that you had a bagel waiting for me downstairs, and I was like, well, in that case, so...
Stick for Garrett.
Forget the Friday radio appearance. Where's my bagel?
There you go. And
and thank you for the bagel with the cream cheese.
With the schmear.
I have to tell you what, when I get home from this trip, it's going to be like shakes and like protein, not milkshakes, like protein shakes and vegetables, because I've really done a number on the waistline this week. It's been ugly.
It's been a carb load, right?
Oh my God.
Between pizza at the King and bagels in the morning.
Yeah.
The bagels, by the way, my three sons, and they've got a couple locations, but I go to Stewart Manor, and yeah. I think
is Fred McMurray there, by the way.
there's the Iranian Fred McMurray.
Yeah. Right.
Jay, here we are, and we're wrapping this all up, and it's not a vintage and fabulous and glory-ridden, laden Belmont, but it's a classic. It's a mile and a half. It's important.
It is important. It will be very important if, I think, regardless of the outcome from a three-year-old Eclipse Award standpoint, because if War of Will wins, he's obviously the leader in the clubhouse. And if he doesn't win, it's a complete jump ball for the second half of the year. So that's a significant aspect of it. And, if he could win two of the three classics, it's not the best race I've ever seen. But this is something we discussed this last week or previous weeks on your show. This is a real good example of why the decision to move the Met Mile to Belmont Day several years ago, which everybody said, how can you move it off Memorial Day? Well, here's why. It's going to be seen by far more people. It's going to be seen on national television. It's going to be generating far more in handle than it would have. And you've got it as part of a Breeders' Cup quality card, because unlike in 2015 or 2018, not every year is there a Triple Crown bid. And so, the Belmont is part of a terrific card, but it's not the compelling race that it was when there's a Triple Crown bid, let alone the success that we've seen twice in recent years. But even in California, Chrome was going for it this decade in situations like that. But still, I think there's two really good horses in the race, and we'll see if somebody can jump up and beat them, because I think both Tacitus and War of Will are high-quality colts.
Undoubtedly, and Tacitus, it seems, is the mojo and has got the... the kind of momentum. Even when we came out of Churchill, and even before the Derby, actually, I can recall when Gary Young, for instance, and others, were making their assessments. They said, Tacitus feels like a horse that's going to be better in 5 weeks and is more suited for Belmont, and that that very well could prove out.
He ran a better race in the Derby than I expected him to. He's got the 5 weeks off coming into here, so unlike War of Will, he's coming into the race a little bit fresher. And that situation of running in the Derby, skipping the Preakness, and then the Belmont has been very successful. It's four of the last seven Belmont winners have used that strategy. So he's got a lot going for him. He's trained well here. And the thing that I've noticed about him, having seen him a lot in recent weeks, is that he was, including up to the Kentucky Derby, a very indifferent kind of workhorse. He'd work okay, but never anything that dazzled you. That's changed. He's really turned it on, and his last couple works have been really good, as though, he gets it now. And I'm expecting a monster effort from him Saturday.
I completely understand. It does feel like, you know, like his big opportunity. Mark Cassie getting, you know, plenty of appreciation for being the lone man standing.
Yeah, deservedly so. I mean, War of Will deserves a lot of credit for bouncing out of the rough trip in the Derby, coming back to win the Preakness, and as you mentioned, you know, being the only one who's going to run in all three legs of the Triple Crown. I think that's a real testament to both horse and trainer.
Who else, as part of this, do you feel, you know, warrants some consideration?
To win?
No one else. You think it's those two?
I know that's the, you know, I know right now I've got, like, probably a dollop of cream cheese on my face, but actually that's chalk.
But I'm pumped.
Yeah, I think it's a very chalk. If one of those two doesn't win, I would be highly surprised. I mean, there's other nice horses in here. I picked War of Will second in the racing form. I picked Bourbon War third. It was more of a, I liked him going into the Preakness. I didn't like his race that much in the Preakness, but he added blinkers for the first time that day. They're taking him back off. He was on the gold rail into the backstretch and then was taken wide, and I think he gave up an advantageous position. So I thought, well, why don't I just throw him in for third? And I picked Sir Winston fourth just because I had to pick somebody for fourth. But there's just a lot of horses in here I'm just not all that crazy about. I don't think Jovea, for instance, can get the distance. I've never been a big fan of Tax. I thought he had a gorgeous trip in the Wood Memorial when others, including Tacitus, had a far more compromised trip. So I just don't see how he jumps up and wins, for instance. You know, Trepid Heart's a nice horse, but he's pretty lightly raced, and I think this is a pretty big ask for him. I don't know what to make of Spinoff. I thought his Louisiana Derby was good, and last time he just didn't run at all on the sloppy seal track at Churchill. You know, but I respect that the way this is Pletcher's signature move to skip the Preakness and come in here, and it's worked for him now on three occasions, if you count Rags to Riches, who did sort of the equivalent, running in the Oaks and then not again till the Belmont. So the 5 weeks. And then you've got, so I respect him from that standpoint. And then you've got Everfast, who jumped up and ran a good race in the Preakness, but I really thought he benefited from coming up the gold rail. I think there was a significant advantage that day to being on the inside, as it turned out, and I think he took advantage of that. And then the last horse would be Master Fencer, who I thought overachieved in the Kentucky Derby. His works here have been average, certainly nothing that would get your heart racing for him. So it's hard for me to make a case for him. I know there's a group of people out there who think he's going to jump up and run a good race. I mean, he's the third choice on the morning line here. He's hard for me to make a case for. I admire the sporting nature of his connections for coming over here and running in the Derby and sticking around for the Belmont, but based on what I've seen, you know, he's hard for me to endorse. So it's really hard for me to get past the top two.
Fair enough. One question we don't get a chance to, especially with as big as these days have gotten and these mega cards, we don't spend as much time talking historic proportion. We do, I think, for Triple Crown tries, but away from those, what was your first Belmont? What are your earliest memories of coming here?
Wow. I'd have to look at a media guide to remember what my first Belmont was. I don't.
Well, what's your favorite Belmont moments over the years that stick out?
American Pharoahs Belmont.
That's the best.
To have been in the game this long and then to finally see a Triple Crown winner and the reaction that day was spectacular. So that would stand out just because to finally see it happen after all those years. I was still in college when, early on in college, when Affirmed won. I was a freshman.
That's right, 78. We were freshmen.
That was a long time ago. Yeah. So to see it in person, that would certainly stand out. But I've seen some spectacular performances here, or memorable things. I mean, the Victory Gallop beating Real Quiet in the last jump was a memorable race. There's so many Triple Crown bids over the years to have seen here. And I thought one of the most spectacular performances I saw was a Point Given.
Yeah,
and I was thinking of that this week because...
Yep.
you know, War of Wills trying to emulate what Point Given did, which is, you know, lose the Derby and come back and win the Preakness in Belmont. And I thought Point Given's Belmont was tremendous. He just crushed those horses.
When he came around the turn and with every stride was moving away, the horses were getting smaller.
Yeah.
And was so isolated. In fact, I got a wonderful Adam Coghlanese photo that I was going to put up that where he is just alone. It's amazing, actually. It doesn't rival his father's secretariat shot, but it really kind of is amazing. And there was a good crowd that day.
Right.
And then of course comes back and the Haskell and the Travers wins.
Yeah.
That, you know, the four at the time, right? The four grade ones hadn't been done in a long time. I remember there that being a big deal that he'd won those four straight grade ones.
He was a terrific horse. I mean, he could have been a Triple Crown winner.
Yeah,
he was a really good horse.
I agree. And you know, it's funny though, Jay. In retrospect, after that, because I thought he was coming in, he was going to be a Triple Crown winner, and I've for years later, I would say if he couldn't do it, then it's going to be very tough for anybody because he had all the tools. But it just shows you if you're off by this much,
yeah.
in any, you know, Johnny talks about this. Johnny ABCD. As we saw this week, you know, Johnny says any hiccup is just enough to, you know.
Right. I mean, you've got to be so right for so long that you can't have anything go wrong. I mean, look at, you know, I thought Smarty Jones was going to win the Triple Crown.
Me
and,
too.
You know, midway through the race, he went too fast too soon and got nailed late. And, you know, Big Brown was a horse that I was against. He had trained. You know, there's a lot of revisionist history on that horse, but he had a terrible foot problem all week. He had trained terrible, and people were still trying to, like, overlook all that and make a case for him, irregardless of all the other stuff that people want to say about that horse. I mean, he just was not right that week. And I remember picking – I picked Dennis of Cork. David Carroll,
yep.
Who's now with Mark Cass.
Yep.
Mark Cassie with the War of Will team and has been instrumental in training War of Will. Anyway. So it's, yes, back to your point, I mean, you can't have anything go wrong throughout the Triple Crown and just demand so much. And that's why I think it was so appreciated and people appreciated it so much more when it finally happened because the distances had not been changed or the spacing of the races had not been changed. And if it had been before American Pharoah, there always would have been that asterisk of like, well, I wonder if he would have done it. And,
mm-hmm.
and now we know.
Yep.
So... And it makes it all the more memorable and significant, I think, that he did it on the same timetable as Secretariat and Seattle Slew and Affirmed.
Well, of course, the real reason he did it was just despite Steve Coburn.
Yeah, 1 year later.
No one will ever do it!
No, it's not like no one will ever do it. In my lifetime, no one will ever do it. 1 year later, .. And then 3 years later,
yeah.
.. And fortunately, and I will say this for Steve Coburn, fortunately, he is still alive. So it happened in his lifetime, which I think if you go by what would you rather have, be still alive now or a Triple Crown winner,
There's no doubt.
So it worked out well for him, even if he made a bad prediction.
And we're kidding, because Steve actually is a lot of fun. I was with him at that later on in the year at the Pennsylvania Derby. At Parks, and he really, he and his wife, and they really are quite nice, and he was kind of unfairly labeled coming out of that.
Well, he just got
caught up
in it emotional, but still, I mean, you know, just as we've learned then and more recently,
yes.
Sometimes you need to lose gracefully.
Exactly. Well, somebody's going to have to. Eight horses are going to have to lose gracefully, Jay, in the Metropolitan Handicap. And it is – that could be a prop bet in itself. I mean, who's going to be off the board among the top five morning line choices? It is just – really going to be a war out there. I hope it is. I hope it's not you know, somebody somehow wiring. I honestly,
that'd be hard to imagine.
Yeah, that's what I think.
That, to me, it's the not only is it the race of the day, it's the race of the year so far in North America with McKenzie and Mattioli and Thunder Snow shipping in and Cold Front back from Dubai and Firenze Fire, who loves this racetrack and promises fulfill trying to stretch out, and a couple of others in here. You know, maybe Prince Lucky can bounce back. His last race was no good, but you know, he's obviously a better horse than that. So it's really a great race, and it's to me the best. It's the race I'm most looking forward to on the day.
I completely agree, and a mix of styles, you know, actual sprinters that are going the elongated distance, turn back candidates, you know, it Ron Anderson, who's as savvy as there is and doesn't have an interest in the race in terms of Joel, he pointed to the outfield fence with McKenzie.
Why is that pointing to the outfield
fence? He said that himself. I'm calling my shot.
On the favorite? I don't understand how that's calling. I mean,
he's just saying that if you're looking for, he said, if you're looking for a single, you want to make a stand, he said McKenzie's the stand.
All right. I mean, he might be right. I mean, McKenzie's a tremendous horse.
It's a tough it's a tough place to say this horse, to use a Jay-ism, won't lose.
Right.
And Jay pulls the only, that is stored like they store the Ark in Raiders. you only bring that out for special occasions.
Yeah, for American Pharaohs. I brought that out for American Pharaohs Belmont. I know that.
But you've also actually,
there have been a few, but
there's a couple of prices you've delivered
you can't overdo it. You got to make sure it's right.
Exactly. You have to.
But anyway, not that I'm going to point at the fence here, but I like Firenze Fire in that race. I think he trips out well from where he's drawn, and I think he loves this racetrack.
Yes,
he's just a different horse here, and I think he's 4-1 on the morning line. I was hoping to get a tick higher than that because I was hoping Thunder Snow would be a shorter price than him. But I was hoping to maybe get 5 on him with McKenzie and Mattioli taking money.
He could.
That
could happen.
I mean, he's got to run the race of his life, but I was hoping, from a gambling standpoint, I was hoping he might end up being a better price, so we'll see. I have great respect for McKenzie and Mattioli. I mean, any of those horses could win, but I thought Firenze Fire could end up being a trip out really well from where he's drawn and at the price.
Any other thoughts on the 3 days of racing? Any of the West Coast participants that we get Catalina Cruiser back in action?
Looking forward to seeing him. He hasn't run, since the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and obviously he's better than he ran that day. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does, because it could be really fun to see him the second half of the year. There's a horse that's running in the Just a Game that I'm interested in seeing. I really like the way Environs had won at Keeneland. And when she ran last time out at Churchill, I just think she caught a track that she just really didn't like, or course, I should say, that she really didn't like. And I'm thinking she can bounce back on firm ground here. Obviously, Rushing Fall is going to control the pace, but if somebody could maybe lean on Rushing Fall a little bit, I think Environs has the kind of kick that could pull off a minor upset in here. So I'm going to gamble on her in that race.
That's the other Chad Brown,
right?
Nice.
So that's one that I like, and I got to give a shout out to my friend Eric Johnson. Wish him good luck with Landeskog and the Woody Stevens. I mean, the race came up really, really tough, but it'd be pretty cool to see him win. I think you know, obviously Mind Control and with Complexity coming back off the layoff, those are a couple of Grade One winners, and the newly minted Grade One Woody Stevens. That's going to be a real fun race, a good gambling race with 11 horses going in there. I think Honest Mischief's a real nice horse. He's got to overcome the rail, but. Like to see Landeskog. I don't know that I can gamble on Landeskog. I don't know if the race comes up well for him, but I just think he'd be an interesting story. My gambles for the day are going to be on Environs and on Firenze Fire, and for the Belmont, I'm very strongly in the camp of Tacitus.
And, of course, the most important prop bet in all of racing, the progress toward the 5.5 at King Alberto.
Well, we're stuck on 4, and we're going to be stuck on 4 because I can't get there today or tomorrow owing to conflicts. So the line is good. I mean, we got to 4 pretty quick. The over-under is 5.5. It's gonna land on 5 or 6, so it's a good gambling number before I get out of here. So we'll see what kind of progress we can make by the time I get out of here Sunday.
Well, they're still taking wagers.
Yes.
Go to Odds Checker, and we're going to refine it too into meatball, mushroom, and categories. I think
right. That's
for next year. Jay Privman, everybody, DRF Privman, and the coverage of the Daily Racing Form. Top and bottom all over the place here the next 72 and 96 hours. And Jay, we'll obviously recap next week, but a wonderful Triple Crown watch sequence this year again, as always.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. And thanks even more so for the bagel.
Yeah. Jay Privman. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to check in with Dick, and we've got Tony to get to and much, much more. We are live at Belmont. The waterworks have stopped. Thanks from above, whoever turned off the spigot. Thank you. Back after this to Belmont.